Griff, how important is customer support for you as a buyer?
Well, Doug, it's actually really important. I try to give good customer support and I expect it in return.
Have you ever had a less than satisfactory experience with an eBay seller or merchant?
In the thousands of transactions I've had on eBay, I've had a handful.
How did it end up?
Well, except for this one time with a fragrance seller from Brooklyn who shall be nameless, where the entire transaction went totally off the rails, the rest were really adequately resolved by the sellers involved. It was pretty good.
So like any other buyer, when something goes wrong with a transaction, be that a defective item or an item never delivered,
or worse, an item that is not the one the seller described, that's rare, but still an unsettling situation when it happens because you expected the right customer service. And that's our theme for this week.
Ah, the right customer service, how to provide it, and why it can be the life or death of your business.
It sure can, and although I sell on eBay for many reasons, the top of mind purpose, besides getting rid of things and making a little profit, is to make my buyers happy.
And that can be easier said than done.
Oh, that's so true. Any merchant can claim to have an excellent customer service strategy, but a customer service policy is not tested when things go right.
It's only tested when things go wrong, whatever the reason.
I'm Griff, and this is eBay for Business, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Griff.
By the way, I want to thank you for filling in for Alan, who's on vacation. Doug, who's on deck for this week's show?
First up on the main story, we speak with eBay sellers Bill Ingersoll and from the UK, Eddie Latham, about their customer service strategies.
And then we are joined by eBay's own Jody Newsom from the Global Customer Experience Team in Salt Lake City. Jody's filling in for our scheduled guest, Wendy Jones, who unfortunately was called away this week on business. We hope to have Wendy on the show in the near future. But Jody is a seasoned expert on the topic of customer service, so we're in her good hands.
Of course, your questions.
Yeah, and with any luck, our accurate answers.
We do our best, but up first, all the eBay news that fits.
Now it's time for the buzz. Hey, what's the matter, Doug?
I miss him, Griff.
Who? Your friend? Your dog? Morrissey?
My Alan. My work partner. My eBay. My eBay. Not E-B-A-E. E-B-A-Y. eBay.
Yeah.
eBay.
Yeah, okay.
I told myself I wouldn't cry in front of the listeners, Griff.
I'm sure you'll soldier on somehow.
Griff?
What?
Perhaps you could do an Irish accent just for,
no,
you know.
No, come on. Pull yourself together.
Thank you, Griff. That slap was very helpful.
Now, can we start the buzz, please, or I have to slap you again?
Yes, Griff. I am prepared.
Oh, good. Welcome to the buzz. Joining me this week in studio is Doug. You get one name now, too, by the way, so you're just Doug.
Like divine.
Not even close. Let's start with hot topics in the community, Doug.
In internet sales tax communications, Griff, eBay began collecting sales tax for New York and Idaho on June 1st. There are more states coming July 1st, and we have a handy help page we update with all the latest. And that link will be in the transcript of the podcast. Also, keep an eye on seller news announcements in the eBay community for the latest news.
Now, I'm going to keep you focused, Douglas, and or Doug. Which one is it? And no obscure references or tangents, please.
A recent announcement regarding the removal of unnecessary shipping services from listings was met with mixed reaction, Griff. Sellers voice concerns that the shipping options being hidden may be a service that the buyer prefers due to past experiences. Questions expressed primarily revolve around the loss of choice this change poses, but other sellers did see the removal of slower and more expensive options as a smart decision by eBay that will improve the buyer experience.
Yeah.
We've shared the community feedback with the shipping team, Griff.
Yeah, and I think it's important to mention here that we never touch the first shipping option that the seller provides. That's the one that will always be first.
Mm-hmm.
It's subsequent services that the seller may opt to provide. If one or more of those are not ideal for the buyer, we may hide them.
Interesting.
Now, speaking of shipping, Doug, we do have an update, maybe even a pro tip. It was our producer, Rob, in New York, who pointed this out to us. Thank you, Rob. One very common item that FedEx considers dangerous is lithium-ion batteries. Remember last week we were talking about this new surcharge they're going to add if you're shipping dangerous items and you're not labeling them or packaging them as such? That means that anyone selling a smartphone or a tablet needs to label that there is a lithium-ion battery in the package, and that's important.
Yes. And speaking of Griff and Doug working together like today, we are both listed as speakers at eBay Open.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, for those early birds, so you get the news here, Griff.
I guess I do.
For those early birds who secured tickets to eBay Open, workshop and speakers are now live on the site.
Ah.
So take a look and create a plan. Add me and then add Griff. Only 6 weeks away. We'll be covering the event here as well for those not joining. So go to ebayopen.com and click the speakers link to see more.
A recent seller news announcement details how we're making it easier to identify the item specifics that matter most. Now, as mentioned in the 2019 Spring Seller Update, which we're sure you've read, we've made changes to key item specifics.
As part of these changes, any required item specifics in home and garden categories will need to be added to any new or revised listings starting on July 30th. In order to help you identify which listings need to be updated, we'll begin to highlight which item specifics are required and which are recommended as part of the listing flow.
Mm.
This update makes it easier for you to identify which item specifics matter most.
Yeah, and these are important. If you're listing in these categories and you don't have these item specifics, I guarantee you're missing out on buyers who are filtering their searches.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that you're filling these in, it's really important.
Yes.
Now, for more information on key item specifics and how you can optimize your listings, why don't you visit ebay.com/structured data? Let me give you that again. www.ebay.com/structured data. That's one word. Structured data. So there's two D's in that. Structured data. I hate when we do that. Can we just come up with some small
maybe
URL?
A dash?
Yeah. I mean, SD.
Wouldn't
that be so simple?
Yes.
Yeah. Start adding key item specifics to your listings today.
And now a word from our sponsors. This segment is brought to you by eBay.
How ironic.
This June, eBay is celebrating the summer season with the ultimate giveaway for all the buyers and sellers out there who help make eBay the destination for sneakers and streetwear.
Ooh.
We've teamed up with Stadium Goods, the premium resale marketplace, to give away over $10,000 in prizes from Supreme, Jordan, Yeezy, and more.
Mm.
Now through June 30th at 4 p.m. Pacific, buy or sell shoes or apparel to be entered into eBay's Street Sweeps for a chance to clutch some of the hottest sneaker and streetwear items. For more, go to ebay.com/street sweeps.
And we're back with our regular segment.
That's all the news that fits this week, Griff.
Really? That was pretty short.
Yes.
Well, thanks, Doug. Coming up, it's the main story. It's time for the main story. This week, we're here with Bill Ingersoll from Sloanesville, New York. Bill sells under the user ID Bikes, Trikes, and Quads on eBay. And we're also joined by another eBay UK seller, Eddie Latham. Eddie's partners with PJ, who was on earlier on our main story, and they sell under the user ID Velocity Electronics. They're located in the UK in Cambridge. And our theme today is customer service strategies. Welcome to the show, Bill and Eddie.
Hi.
Hello.
Eddie, how important is customer service to a business?
Well, the customer has to be the focus. You know, they're the people that bring in the revenue at the end of the day. And they're the lifeblood of your business, really. I guess how you interact with that customer is a journey that starts at before point of purchase. You know, that can be a customer service inquiry, which helps get money in the till, or that can be after sales. You know, reputation is key, and the internet in particular is so transparent these days, you know, with reviews and feedback and all those sort of metrics that you have to fulfill. It's so easy for people to broadcast what service they've had from you. So it has to be the real center of everything that you do.
You have to be a people person, Bill, in order to be good at customer service.
I would say, I mean, you definitely have to treat that customer like it's a friend or a family member, you know. Marketplace selling in general, there's not too many ways you can differentiate yourself. And I think service is the biggest way you can do it. And especially if you want to charge a premium price for whatever you're selling, you have to have the service to match.
Are you a people person, Eddie?
I'd like to think so, but people I interact with might disagree.
Yeah,
well, we all have our moments.
Yeah, right, I'm sure. But you have to believe that that's a part of yourself in order to do this right. I mean, the people who do this the best.
Yeah, I think good customer services depends on the customer that you have on the end of the telephone or on the end of an email, really. I think anyone that delivers outstanding customer service is a variable, really. It's about reading the situation. And I think part of it is about diffusing something, you know, not getting into long dialogues with people, cutting things in their tracks. What initially could be resolved by a 10% refund, perhaps, in one instance. Actually, if you irate that customer and you cause some friction between them, that can escalate and that can damage your reputation or be in a position whereby actually as a seller, it could end up costing you more revenue than it could have initially. So it's about diffusing. I think it's also important not to underestimate the actual human cost of having to go back to people's emails multiple times, really. Mm-hmm. What you really want to do as a seller is you want to get on with selling. Yeah, customer service is a big part of that. But actually, you just want to draw a line under things, both for the customer and for your own staff, really. So diffusing things is very important.
I'm going to use a real life situation that just happened that I was witness to. As an eBay employee, I get emails from sellers who say, I need you to help in and step in here. And it was a seller who sold an item that was, it was a clock. And the item arrived damaged. When the buyer was angry because she wasn't going to take a return. She said, I said no returns, and she just wasn't going to hear it. And of course, the buyer got very upset. I think the seller probably felt that it wasn't his or her fault, but she responded in kind. This escalated into a really unpleasant situation. I didn't give her any advice. I figured I better stay out of this. I just passed it on to a customer support specialist. What would you say to a merchant or seller who actually experiences this?
The way I approach those situations is I'll look at the listing. Was there anything that could have created confusion with the buyer that I need to work on? If it's under $100 and they have an issue, and I hope none of my customers are listening to this, but I'm doing free returns anyway. If it's going to be opened as item not as described, it's going to elevate my rate. I look at that situation, look at the customer, and I look at it as an opportunity to make a lifelong customer because they're going to remember that time they had an issue and I didn't hassle them about it. And I just gave them what they needed and moved on from it. What would be the point on a $20 product that costs $7 to ship? You paid fees out of it. And just to try to get into a confrontation, maybe subconsciously, you go down that road, you waste time. It's better to just look at it. Is it actually damaged? Is it actually no longer sellable? Issue them the refund. If it was damaged in shipping, get them to send you, you know, some documentation so you can file a claim. It's an investment in your business. It's not a detriment to your business to have those returns. And, you know, of course, if your rate's getting high and things like that, there's probably things you need to work on. But if your rate's sensible, customer has a legitimate problem, you got to look at whatever you're going to lose not taking it on a return and reselling it as a marketing investment.
You said something just now that really struck me, which is the word legitimate. And I think in this case that I brought up, which is an actual case, the seller made the assumption right off that the buyer's complaint was not legitimate and said, you're a liar. Mm-hmm. The item is not damaged. I shipped it out. You damaged. I understand from a certain perspective how a seller would feel like, wait a minute, is this buyer trying to take advantage of me? Should a seller fight against that urge?
As most things in life, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. You can diffuse things very, very quickly. It's like... We quite often have offer telephone support for different products, whether that is a complaint that might come from a customer or a technical inquiry. Mm-hmm. If we get a customer that I think a conversation is going badly, I say to all the customer support staff that work for us, take the person's number and get someone else to phone them back. Because quite actually, that can diffuse the situation initially. And actually, if you break down that barrier and give someone time to reflect on what they've said or how they're saying it, and then someone else approached it in a slightly different manner, that can fix the issue, really.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not even how you say things or you know what you said. Actually, it can just be the person in which they've delivered it. Sometimes you can have customer service inquiries or complaints or whatever it might be because the person's having a bad day. It can be as simple as that. And actually, you just need to take stock, reflect, and then and approach it from a different way. But like everything in life, it's a judgment call. Some things you need to nip in the bud. Some things you need to give it a bit of time and let it recover. I mean, a customer services role is a relationship-based role. Yeah, I mean, you have to read your customer, understand, you know, read the signs about what people are buying, but also know your product. When you're looking at a customer services inquiry, whether good or bad, and let's be honest, most of them are bad, you have to know the product they're buying to be able to think, is that legitimate? You know, is that a technical problem that someone's got the wrong end of the stick on? What is actually driving this and how do I actually get to the root of the problem and diffuse the actual problem?
What are the biggest problems that you get in your business, Eddie? What are the more common complaints that happen?
We sell a lot of electronics-based products and quite often it can be compatibility issues. So we, as much as possible, try to take a proactive approach. So we have 7 customer services, 7 to 10, depending on the time of year, that work for us. Interestingly, some of the people that do actually work for us in a customer service capacity don't actually answer customer inquiries. They're actually proactively going through the reviews and the messages that we get in order to make products improvements. So we actually create and manufacture quite a lot of items under direct consumer capacity. So we are manufacturer, distributor, importer, and then retailer. What we can do is we can take a technical problem that someone's experiencing. Maybe that might be on page 14 of an instruction manual, 14 pages, is actually, if that's a common theme, you put it on page 1. You make sure you're taking out the root. So proactive customer service is far better than reactive. Cuts down on the human element, cuts down the customer disappointment, cuts down on returns. from end to end. That is the dream, really, initially, is not to even have the complaints or the customer inquiries arising.
And that proactive strategy has helped eliminate or lessen the rate of actual calls that you get or emails that you get.
Hugely. It lowers the customer service inquiry. So I guess actually it means you can operate on a smaller base of customer services staff, but actually it lowers your returns. I mean, the returns in the electronics industry can make or break a company because of the distance selling regulations, especially in the UK, people can return anything they like, really. You can't oversell a product, never oversell a product, you know, never describe things for what they are. You're just going to get returns back. Yeah. Make sure what you're doing is you're being honest in the way you're describing it, but making sure there's no technical problems and the customer is getting what they receive when they want to receive it, and limit those returns, really.
Bill, you sell parts and accessories for a very specific type of vehicle. Do you run into the same issues?
I would say 75% of them are customers that didn't review listings. And then I'd say the other 25% is just stuff we were at fault for, whether it was an oversight at some level, you know. I try to track them to a degree to make sure that if it's an issue in our process, I can address it. If it's just a simple mistake, it's really tough to do much about that.
So any strategy for the products they sell is to be proactive with the information being provided up front. Is there a way that you do this as well or could do this?
We used to rely on feedback a lot. We're lucky to see 20% of our customers leaving feedback anymore. So we used a tool from an eBay partner, 3D Sellers. They have a feedback tool, and it goes directly from an eBay message to the customer, asking them if they were satisfied with the purchase, gives them a link to leave feedback. So I find that a lot of customers that won't leave feedback will respond to that message.
Oh.
So we're getting valuable feedback from that, not to mention customers that have issues, but they don't want to open a return or voicing those concerns with us. I'd rather have them do that than say, that wasn't a good experience last time. I'm going to go to someone else. This way I can say, you had a problem. Let me take care of it.
You want to keep that customer.
Yeah. And my industry is very small, so it's not quite as much competition, but it's important to have them trust not only me, but the platform.
A common theme with sellers is I can't afford to take this item back. It costs too much to ship. I didn't make that much money on it. So what's driving their strategy is primarily the cost or the expense of having to make the customer happy. What would you say to a seller who tells you this?
There's a number of things, really. I mean, you need to go in arm with the information, don't you? You need to understand your returns and the cost of returns and the impact that that's going to have on your business. Like I said before, really, you have to lose battles to win wars.
Yeah,
I mean, you have to accept that you take back one product, but the returns in that category might be 10%, for example, because it's an item of clothing. You have to understand those costs of getting the product back. Yeah, in time, you can learn from that. You could use your position as a high volume seller to maybe lower those costs. But really, you know, if you're in a category or selling in a category and you can't weather the storm of those returns, you need to be looking at an alternative category. Your supply chain isn't sufficient and you can't buy those products at a price. You can be competitive because part of being competitive is being able to absorb the cost of the products that come back to you. If you can't do that, then you don't have a profitable business.
Okay, so absorbing the cost. How do you do that, Bill? Do you have a method for absorbing cost?
I think a lot of the time it's easy to take those instances personally, that you put so much time and effort into your business and you don't see how you could have made a mistake when you've dedicated so much of yourself to it. Part of the evolution of a business person from starting out as a hobby seller to a business seller is to kind of understand the game and evolve with it as opposed to resist it the entire time, because you're not going to go anywhere if you spend all of your energy fighting just how things are. So I would just kind of say to roll with the punches on that stuff. But like Eddie was saying, you can't have a business if you can't accept those types of things. So when you're fighting that, it's more of an indication that you need to grow rather than the customer has an issue, because the customer trusted you to deliver the product. And there's very few customers who are actually going to do that fraudulently.
Returns are inevitable. You're going to take a return every now and then. How do you absorb it so that you can get your head past the cost of it and just think, I got to make the customer happy so I can move on to the next customer and maybe keep them?
Like any growing business, I guess you hope that you get economies of scale. This is just one of the things that you get from growing a business. I mean, I always say we started our business 7 years ago and our mission initially was not to make profit. Our mission initially was to learn and then build a business out of that knowledge in which we created. learning doesn't have to be free. And people in the UK spend a lot of money going to university, for example. But in America, I know the costs are absolutely horrendous. But you're doing that to learn. Yeah, you're starting out your journey of selling on eBay. If your plan is to maintain as a small seller, then that's fine. But if you're here to grow a business, then you've got to pay for that educational piece. And part of that is learning about the returns in different categories and which ones to avoid and which ones are going to cause you the problems. Or in certain categories that we sell in, for example, is we deliberately go after categories where there is higher returns. Because it's a big barrier for entry for lots of sellers. Having a good returns mechanic and actually having a system in place in order to take those products back and then resell them perhaps, or be able to test them and stuff, is a huge barrier to entry. And that can lead you to some very relatively uncompetitive markets. Whereas the products that you're looking at that have no returns, that you can put in a nice small package and send out, and all these little products that you think are the perfect storm, selling online quite often aren't, because there's no margin there because they're saturated markets. Whereas exactly, the difficult ones are sometimes where you find that little niche, where you find that little option and stuff, and build your business around. There's businesses that have done very, very well by building a business around a good returns system. It's actually, that is their unique selling point, is actually that they're able to take product back efficiently. They're able to resell that product efficiently. And someone was only telling me the other day about a clothing manufacturer. And I said to him, oh, you know, the price of getting that product back must be very difficult for you. And he said, interestingly, price of getting the product back in the clothing market is actually relatively easy. So the thing that costs us all the money is ironing the clothes when they come back.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And I said to him, and this is a big multi-million pound company in the UK, and that's something I'd never even considered. Yeah, so you need to learn about whether it's from day one. Maybe this business has been so successful because they've got an efficient ironing system. Yeah, you just don't know.
Yeah. I've always advised sellers that are worried about the cost. You know what your return rate is. You can get a pretty good idea of what it costs per transaction, and then just spread that cost in the future across transactions as an extra piece of your margin. So you have a column that says mitigate returns. I found when I was selling used clothing that, and my return rate was anywhere from 5 to 7%. Sometimes it would be lower, that I could figure out how much it cost me to take returns. The year before, I had a pretty good idea what I was going to do for transactions. And I just charged, like, it came out to like a dime to 20 cents extra. And then I had a peace of mind. I didn't have to worry about it.
Yeah. You know, you can't be ignorant to your costs. Like, you have to be armed with the information and you have to understand it. But, you know, that is the passion that's born out of enjoying what you do and loving your product and stuff is going to help you build that knowledge, really. Without that knowledge, you're going to be at a disadvantage. The internet in particular is very, very competitive. But like you say, if you amortize the cost of your returns, quite often it's nowhere near as bad as you think. You think you're giving away £10, but actually if you get that, or $10 here in the US, if you get that product back, actually, and then you resell it, the cost is only the price of sending it out to the person and then getting the product back. You've still got a product that you can sell.
So it's amortizing. That's the word I was looking for. Bill, do you amortize these costs for your business?
My return rate's pretty low. It hovers right between 1% and 2%.
Oh, that is low.
So my item not as described is even lower than that. So, I mean, it's not as much of a factor into where I have to track it to that degree. I only really track the reason. So if it's item not as described, I have to look whether it was valid or they just didn't review the listing. Overall, it's such a small percentage, and I can't prevent those item not as described when the information was there and they chose not to read it. Yes, to a degree, I'll look at the overall cost of my returns, and I just kind of make sure that they stay at a reasonable level. But it clicked with me because early on when I was selling, I had a customer who had an issue with a product, and I said, well, I'm just going to refund you. And he said, oh, thanks. Do you have this part, and this part? He spent another $150 with me on a $14 return. So that was a small investment to get $150 back that would have went to someone else if I gave him a hard time.
And you kept a customer. One of the hardest things to do is keep a customer.
Yeah.
You've got a new seller who's come up to you and says, I hear you're very experienced, Eddie, with customer support. And apparently you are. You've been running
thanks.
It for a while.
Thank you.
And I'm having issues, and I just find this to be the most frustrating part of my business. What can you tell me that's going to make me feel more at ease about difficult customers and how to handle them?
I guess customer services is not necessarily why people get into e-commerce. It's just a byproduct of that process, really. I guess if you're running a small business, for example, customer services can be not necessarily something that you welcome, but I guess you ultimately have to look at the bigger picture, look at how you can use that to develop your customer, build up a loyal customer, and build up a business.
It's important to have a strategy. Bill?
I would tell them to pull their personal feelings out of the situation and look at it strictly from a business standpoint. And don't look at just the money. Look at the human value that's there in your customer. Some customers that are just completely unreasonable, and you're never going to do anything to solve that. In that situation, tell them to open the return on eBay and ship it back. 5 out of 10 times, they're not even going to bother shipping it back, and customer support will close it out, and you don't have to worry about it. And in other instances where you're at fault and you can identify where that came into play, look at it as an investment to build a relationship with a customer. It's going to go a lot further than a t-shirt or a hat or some Facebook marketing is going to. They're going to tell their friends, and then their friends are going to tell their friends once they have good experiences, and it's exponentially valuable.
Is the customer always right, Eddie?
The customer has to always be right. At least they have to think that they're right.
Right.
Yeah. It's always better if you make your boss believe it's his idea. Yeah.
Exactly.
And Bill. Selling online can be quite a lonely existence. Yeah. Especially if you're running a small company, and having just that interaction with people can actually be quite rewarding. And it doesn't happen very often that you get someone phoning you and thanking you for great customer services. But when you do, that can be ultimately very rewarding, and hearing the stories about people using your products. And actually, when I think about the process of someone actually using a product that we've designed, and someone phones or sends an email saying, I've really enjoyed this product, or you read a feedback saying, I gave this to my son for Christmas or daughter for Christmas, and it really made their Christmas, I guess that's ultimately very rewarding. So it's not always negative feedback. There is some positive feedback, and just take solace in those comments that do come back.
Is the customer always right, Bill?
Well, no, but I mean, yes, to a degree, I would agree that you need to make the customer feel that they're correct in how they feel. You can easily disarm that situation if you handle things right. I've always felt like if you're emotionally attached to that transaction, even if you try to fake your response to them, it can come across snarky, whether it's over the phone or in an email. So if you can't answer it in a happy manner where you're happy to be speaking to that customer, leave it alone, come back to it a little bit later and go over it.
Or send it to another employee.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. First and foremost, you need to be professional with customers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not even necessarily the content of the email, but actually sometimes the way that it's structured can be all important. It's actually, you know, if you write, dear sir or madam at the beginning of it, and you say thank you for your custom at the end of it, actually what goes between those two lines can sometimes be lost. And actually, you know, you get an image of a company and someone that cares about their customer, even though in the middle you might be delivering quite a bad message. Actually, that could be diluted by the fact that you seem like a professional outfit, which people want to buy from, people that I think that can deliver, people that are going to have a structured response.
Make the buyer happy.
New sellers will obsess about feedback. Well, I'm not going to give him a refund because he's going to leave me bad feedback. It's another incentive. Do free returns and follow up on your process. I've had buyers who will leave a positive feedback with a negative comment, and you see sellers across message boards and things like that super angry about that. But on the flip side, there's customers who will leave a good comment and a bad feedback.
Our own research shows that when it comes to buyers and feedback on eBay, at least, yeah, they do look for the negatives or neutrals, but they're more interested in seeing how the seller responded.
Yeah.
Because that can show you how professional and how customer-oriented you were. So if you get a customer who says, I was very unhappy, I wouldn't recommend this, and then you have a seller respond and say, this buyer is crap, and I don't, and you know, and you see people go off, I'm thinking, if I was a buyer, I wouldn't buy from you. Whereas if you see a seller say, I'm really sorry you had a bad experience, email me, I'm sure we can make this right, I'm thinking to myself, that's the seller I want.
It's a judgment call. You know, you have to think of the customers where you need to leave that one and not go back to them. But yeah, a caring company generally is a successful company, yeah. Not even a company, even if you're a personal seller. Yeah, you need to think about how you're portrayed by future buyers.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I want to thank you both for stopping in.
Thank you, too.
I know you have a busy week this week and taking the time out. Bill's been taking hours out. I think he wants to take over the show.
You're welcome to it, Bill.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Do you ever want to start your own podcast? I think it'd be great. We've been talking with Bill Ingersoll, who sells under the name Bikes, Trikes, and Quads on eBay, and Eddie Latham, who sells under Velocity Electronics, and he's located in Cambridge in the UK. I want to thank you both.
Thank you, too.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming up next, it's Inside eBay. Now it's time to take a peek inside eBay, as we do every week on the segment called Inside eBay. And this week, we're focusing on the right customer service. And to that end, joining us now, I'm so excited, from my old hometown, way back when, in Salt Lake City, is eBay Director of Buying and Selling Customer Experience, Jody Newsom. Jody, thanks for taking the time out of your busy work schedule to converse with us today.
Oh, Griff, I'm actually really excited. Just the opportunity to be able to talk to you and talk to everyone about our focus and how we're trying to elevate our service for our customers is so exciting. So thanks for inviting me. I'm thrilled at this opportunity.
Well, Jody, it's my pleasure as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in the customer service universe?
Absolutely. I've been in customer service for well over 30 years. Started as a customer service agent in helping customers solve their problems. And over the years, I've been able to work in many areas from trust and risk to buying and selling, helping people really resolve their issues. I've been with eBay now 16 and a half years, had a wonderful career here and working with many different groups. Again, I mentioned trust and risk. I've worked with the Motors Group. I've worked with buying. I've worked with selling. Global expansion has been a huge focus, right, as we expand around the globe. And so my background is really for over 30 years, helping support our customers starting from the ground up.
I have to assume from your title, which is a rather long one, Jody, congratulations, that you connect with both eBay sellers and eBay buyers. Is there a difference in how you and your GCX team, and I should define that acronym, that stands for Global Customer Experience, approach these two very different customer bases, buyers and sellers?
You know, Griff, I think you have to look at both experiences differently, but also understand so many of our customers are both. Right? So they are trying to sell on the site as well as buying. I am a Uber buyer and I can buy something in probably 15 seconds on the app, which is incredible. So focusing on what our buyers need, they want to just buy something. They want it fast. They want it right. They want it at their door. And if there's a problem, they want to be helped immediately. Our sellers, same thing. But you know, our sellers, they're looking to say, how can I build a business possibly on eBay? Maybe I just want to be a small C2C seller, but what can I do so that I can make a profit, but I can do the right thing? How do I, you know, target the right buyers? How do I bring them in? So helping our teammates and that are supporting these amazing customers every day have those skill sets is really something that we strive for excellence over and over again. I've been here 16 years. We've continued to transform our service and we've gone where we're really complicated, where we want to be simple. We want to have that right teammate with the right knowledge for that customer at that right time. So for sellers, absolutely, they want it simple. There's a lot of things upcoming that we're focusing in on the sellers to be able to provide that for them. And for customer service, I think you need to look at both from a resolution standpoint, but also to say, okay, sellers, how can we better support you?
If we were just a simple retail site here, I suppose this job would be a lot easier, right?
Right. Absolutely. But we're not. We're bringing people together around the world. It's not anything that anybody else does.
Now, do you talk primarily to buyers or primarily to sellers? And I know that there's that overlap, but do you find over time that most of the advice or most of the assistance that you're giving is to buyers or sellers?
For my group, the majority is buyers, where we're really trying to help them be able to buy the item they're looking to purchase. But yeah. We have a good balance between both. And our objective is to help our teammates get to a point where they can help both buyers and sellers. We're not looking to say, you need to know everything in the universe. We want to make sure they have the skills to help that customer. So it's really important that our teammates that support our buyers really understand the experience that they're going through. We absolutely encourage all of our employees and all of our teammates and our leaders to be the customer. Put yourself in their shoes. You've got to experience what they experience to be able to help them.
In your experience, in the team's experience, do you hear some common misconceptions about eBay marketplace sellers that buyers hold?
I think we hear that. I don't think it's as big as some people think because overall our sellers do an incredible job. I don't think I've had a bad experience myself as a buyer for a long time, but when our buyers do have a problem, they're contacting us. They want us to intervene. They want us to be able to solve that problem, helping them to understand what our sellers do, the service that they provide, and educating them. I hear it every day, all day on the phones with our teammates that they're educating on what our platform does, especially for new buyers. They don't understand that we don't actually have these items in stock.
Exactly.
We're bringing them together with someone around the globe that possibly you would never be able to find this item anywhere else. You know, having that unique choice, right?
Yeah.
Being very specific to what that buyer wants. But overall, our sellers do a really, really great job, and we just continue to educate our buyers on what our platform is.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I'm also an Uber buyer, and it's been a long time since I've had even a less than ideal transaction with an eBay seller. It's what keeps me coming back. Mm-hmm. But then, do you, in your conversations with sellers, hear some common themes about buyers that are mistaken assumptions?
We do hear that from sellers, because typically they're calling us if they're having a problem with the transaction, or it's post-transaction where the buyer is saying, this isn't what I ordered, I haven't got it in time. And the seller is saying that maybe this buyer doesn't understand the service that they provide. So we hear it on both ends. And I think it's really a matter of us simplifying our site, simplifying our service, helping them to understand the great opportunity that we offer to both the buyers and the sellers. But Griff, I'll be honest, the sellers do a great job stepping up the game when it comes to this industry and the whole and the competition that's out there. They want to do a great job. We hear it from both, but overall, they want buyers. They want to know what they can do better.
Yeah.
To be able to attract buyers to their products.
Well, that's heartening to hear. So they're primarily concerned with their own business and making it grow.
Yeah,
that's good to hear.
Yeah.
You said you're an Uber buyer. I don't know if you sell as well.
Yeah, I do sell, not as much as I would like.
Well, it's hard, isn't it, if you get a full-time job?
Right.
You've learned a lot doing this in 16 years. Do you find that this helps when you're having to advise a buyer or a seller when they're trying to resolve an issue that they couldn't resolve themselves?
Absolutely. You know, and it's not just here. It's in my personal life, too. How many times do we hear from, you know, our customers as well as people around us, oh, eBay's complicated. I had this problem and I couldn't get it resolved and I didn't know where to go. And helping educate them to understand, no, there are spaces for you to go, and really helping them to understand how simple our site is. And, you know, there are complicated situations that sometimes the buyer or the seller is not going to get the resolution they want if the transaction didn't go as planned. I think with our sellers, it's about giving them advice on what they can do better. Education is key. Education is helping them to not have a complicated situation moving forward. Is there something different they could do in their listings? Is there something that they could add? Is there something to be more clear? How can they improve their business? And so over time, it's really helping them to take it to the next level. I always say that the best customer service is no customer service, because we already provide a great product. Obviously, customer service is necessary, and that's what we're here for. We're here to help them work through those complicated issues. If they've got an issue that possibly this buyer might not understand exactly what is happening on the back end, but then the seller giving them advice on connecting to their buyers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Helping them take it to the next level. I'll give you an example. I won't name the company, but I had a situation where my account was compromised.
Oh.
Yeah, a very different company, but I received immediate notifications and I was on the phone and I was concerned that it might not go well. And it was a great experience. They took care of me. And I feel that we do the same thing for our customers here, that we want them to know that this is an incredible site. Sometimes things happen. They're rare. We're here to resolve those issues for them and help them through that.
So you are very eloquent, and I'm wondering if that eloquence came naturally, or is it something that you've honed over the last 16 years, having to talk to like thousands of customers?
I think it's something that you learn over the years and really understanding what we're here for. We're just here for our people. We're here for our customers. We're here for our employees. We're here for each other. We're here for our community to make things better. And looking at life as the older I've gotten over the years...
Yeah.
It's really about what's important. And I take this into my personal life also. You have this one life. Why not make the best of it? And I truly believe in our purpose and what we do.
We have a series of values, but the one that I'm thinking about right now is keep it human.
Absolutely.
I don't think I've heard anyone in our company express that value so eloquently.
Oh, thanks, Griff.
Jody, thank you so much for joining us, and continued success and congratulations on the great work you and the GCX team do over there in Salt Lake City. We've been speaking with Jody Newsom. She's the Director of Buying and Selling Global Customer Experience and the Customer Support Team in Salt Lake. Coming up, your questions.
Hey, Doug, you know what time it is?
What time is it, Greg?
It's time for questions.
Oh, very exciting.
And hopefully our accurate answers.
Yes, this is one of the best parts of the show.
Well, for you, maybe.
Yes.
This is for me, too. I'm just kidding. So lead us into this. I know that you collected a bunch of questions from the site.
Yes.
Can we start? You can read it, and we'll talk about it.
Sure, sure. And just so you know, we get questions from multiple areas, from the podcast feedback form, from email.
The one in the mustard yellow box.
The one in the mustard yellow box that Griff loves the color of.
Love it.
From our Facebook page.
Oh, really?
And then, you know, and of course, from the fabulous eBay community.
What about podcast at ebay.com?
Podcast at ebay.com. Yeah.
And what about the phone feedback number?
Remember the phone number? Yeah. Yes. The email and phone number.
What's that phone number, Doug?
Podcast at ebay.com. And the phone number is
1-888-723-4630. I've been saying it for 20 years.
That's right.
Anyway, can you read the first question, Doug?
Yes, Griff. Our first question is from LG Shop Official. LG Shop Official asks, is there a bestsellers list for each category I can access?
Oh, I don't know. Have we ever talked about it on the show, Doug?
No, but it's encouraging to see that LG Shop Official wants to do some research. That's
right.
Good.
And actually, we have talked about it on the show,
yes,
but
we
go
have.
On.
All right. Well, there are many, actually a few ways you can do this. One of my favorite areas of the site that we have is explore.ebay.com.
Right.
You go that you can basically go there, see what's selling real time. You can break it down by search, by item, by category. What's hot, what's trending, and it's just all right there. You should always dig into listings, dig into the categories you're interested in, dig into other sellers.
That's what I do.
And when you do a search, click that sold listings box, and then you can see what's selling, what prices are selling for. Those are two great ways. Any other ideas, Greg?
Well, when you click the sold listing box, then you can sort it by prices as well.
Yes, so that's true.
See the highest priced items, especially in apparel, like clothing, shoes, and accessories. I've picked up on some trends in the past that were very informative for me about knowing what to keep an eye out for when I was sourcing it more actively. And there's one more important that you didn't even think of. Oh, come on. Old tool, not me.
Would it be an old tool that recently became a new eBay tool?
That's the one.
Terapeak.
Yeah,
that's right. Terapeak can help you see what's trending and help determine your prices.
Right. And if you have a store subscription, now it's free. Is that part of the store subscription? You can actually access Terapeak and all of the data that's there. It's a rich data application where you can look for trends per category. You can see what's really hot. All of those work. I personally love explore.ebay.com because you get some cool ideas.
For
about
sure.
What's really hot on the site. But if you want a longer look, because that's a current snapshot. But
yes.
If you want a longer look back, check out Terapeak as well.
Explore.ebay.com. If you click the bestsellers link at the top, that is broken down by category.
Yeah, it is.
And so you will see the top sellers there.
So you started off with a question that was really easy to answer.
And I convoluted it.
No, you didn't. It was pretty good.
All right. Well, let's get a little deeper, Griff.
Please.
Why isn't your app for iOS uniform between iPad and iPhone?
Well, okay. I'm not familiar with either. What do you know about this?
I was told that they are uniform with the exception of having larger margins on the iPad. So maybe that's the issue. I'm not sure. I've mostly used the Android app.
Yeah, me too. I've used the iPhone app recently. I haven't used the iPad. But if somebody is going to point out that they're not uniform, I think they're thinking beyond just the margins. So with all due respect to our team, the mobile team, I'm not absolutely sure that that's the only exception to the two. Maybe the person who answers this question, if they can provide some examples of what's different, we can then go back to the team and say, hey, but our questioner who uses both pointed out that it's not just the margins, it's this. Or if it's just the margins, I hope this answered your question.
It's from a friend of mine who's a longtime eBay antique seller, still doing well.
Well, you got a lot of friends who submit you questions. What's our next question?
All right. How about a better phone app for sellers?
Oh, please.
Searching your own listings, doing better research that doesn't vary as much from doing searching on a computer, and the ability to revise, relist sold items. If not, how do you do these things without having to try the web version?
As someone who's just started using the app actively again, it can do some things really cool, like scan barcodes, but I can't access my business policies, so I can't add those.
I have heard that.
I can't sort my active listings by earliest listed and, you know, the ones that are ending soonest and the ones that are the longest listings, which drives me crazy.
Okay.
Do you have any other complaints?
When I listed my first item on eBay, it was taught at an eBay summit that we should start with the mobile app. So I thought it was very useful, but I've noticed some stuff. But The mobile team says they're working on this stuff in terms of searching your own listings. You can search, they say you can currently search within your own active sold, unsold listings on iOS and in some of the screens on Android. So we're still working on that. More will be coming as we migrate more of the pages to new services.
Hey, I never noticed it, but maybe it's not there. But is there a link in the mobile app where you can send suggestions? I don't think there is.
I'm not sure. There should be. That was great.
So let's go back to them and say, hey, can you put a
suggestions link in
there? Well, I think it would be important because everything that this questioner talks about, searching your own listings, doing better research, and the ability to revise and relist sold items, it's all of these different things are not there. Plus the things that bother me, which is I want to be able to select for my business policies. I want, basically what I want is I want what's exactly on the desktop.
Sure. To me, that makes sense.
Why can't I have that, Doug?
I don't know.
I'm 65. I don't got much time left. I want that.
That's true.
There you go. All right. Is that it, Doug?
That's all we have for this week, Griff.
That's good because I think I need some. I go back on my meds with some water. You have a glass of water?
I do.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. By the way, guess what that means if that's the last question? It's time to wrap up the episode.
Okay.
So let's do that.
All right. It's very exciting.
And that's all she wrote, Doug.
I hope you picked up some customer service pointers, Griff.
You know, I did. It's always enlightening to hear from others on the topic. What's up for next week's show, Doug?
Next week's show is almost entirely about an old eBay tool.
Me?
Please, Griff.
Right.
Next week's show is about an old selling tool that recently became a new eBay seller tool.
Well, let me guess. If it's not me, it's Terapeak.
Bingo. Yeah. Next week, we'll talk about how the recently acquired Terapeak can provide sellers the data and information they need.
Like for pricing inventory or uncovering trends in scarcity. Now, do you use Terapeak, Doug?
I do not, but I have heard of it. Do you use it, Griff?
Well, I have in the past, but I haven't used it in a while. But now I'm intrigued, and I think I'll definitely explore Terapeak in preparation for next week's show, of course, as a good co-host does.
Yes, and a Boy Scout is always prepared.
That's my motto.
Such a good Boy Scout.
You have no idea.
Speaking of ideas, if you have an idea or a question or a comment that you want to share with the world.
With the world? That seems a little exaggerated, Doug. You mean our podcast world.
If you have anything you want to share with our podcast world, you can call on.
That's 888-723-4630. 888-723-4630. And you won't believe it, but you can actually call that hotline. Are you ready for this? Any time of the day, any day of the week. Leave a question or comment. We just might put it on the air.
Or say you're a shy person.
I'm not.
We know, but if you are a shy person, you can email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
Or, and this is a great one, you can submit your question, thought, idea, or comment on our special eBay community page, which you can find at ebay.com/podcast.
And just click here link inside the mustard yellow box on the upper right-hand corner of the page and fill in the submission form.
I love that mustard yellow color.
Yes.
It's very designer.
Yes.
Hey, are you antsy?
Antsy pantsy?
Cooped up in your selling space with no one to talk to?
Like a chicken coop?
Hungry for human contact?
Within tasteful limits, of course.
Afraid you might be losing your mind?
No comment.
Then definitely you should be attending a local eBay seller meetup in your area.
Or scheduling a visit with your shrink.
At seller meetups, sellers share tips, stories, insights.
Meds?
And now stop that. Even complaints. You can see meetups that are scheduled on our special eBay community page for meetups at, get ready, www.ebay.com/meetups.
And don't forget to tune into our weekly live video stream on the eBay for Business Facebook page every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific time. Go to facebook.com/ebayforbusiness.
And that's it. We're done for the week. Crank those credits.
The eBay podcast team.
Community head honcho Brian Burke.
Co-host Absentia Alan Eisbitt. I miss you, buddy.
Marketing strategist Liz Austin.
Editor-in-chief and host Griff.
Executive segment producer and scriptwriter and bromancer in the extreme Doug Smith.
Alan, come back.
eBay for Business is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411. What is it with you and Alan?
I just like him. He completes me.
Does your wife know about this?
I think so. I think she sees the photos on Instagram.
You two are so modern.
She's okay with it as long as I leave her alone.
I'm not going to go there. I just think it would be wrong for me to... Who am I kidding? I'm going there.
It's the accent. Come on now.
Oh, even, it's the accent. Right?
Most people don't realize it's fake.
The Irish... Alan's Irish accent?
He's from Bronx.
You're kidding.
The Bronx.
He had us all fooled.
Yeah, you should hear his New York accent.
Alan, you have a lot to answer for when you come home.
From the Bronx.
Just wait till your father comes home.
Yes, right. From the homeland.
You're in trouble, boy.